Welcome back to Inside the Boardroom, a podcast from the Carlson School of Management at the University of Minnesota. I'm Jamie Plusser, the Assistant Dean for Marketing and Communications. In this series, our goal is to bring you thoughts, ideas, inspiration, and points of view from business leaders and academic leaders in Minnesota and beyond. Like many things nowadays, our content comes from a virtual event. This episode features a panel discussion where there was talk about strategy, leadership, and adaptation in a post-social distancing world. Carlson School Dean Sri Zahir is joined by three guests. Whit Alexander, who is a Chief Transformation, Innovation, and Membership Officer at Best Buy. Marcelo Montero, Vice President for Strategy and Growth Ventures in the Protein and Salt Division at Cargill. And Christy Sovereign, who is the Senior Managing Director at Accenture. Now, let's hear from Dean Zahir and our panelists, recorded in May at the Carlson School's First Tuesday Speaker Series.
Today is another milestone event in this series, our first virtual First Tuesday and the largest audience we've ever had, with nearly 1,000 of you planning to join us to learn from our wonderful panel of speakers. We're happy to do our part in promoting social distancing while still bringing you timely business expertise from leaders in our community. For many of you, I know this is true, these last 2 months have felt like dog years, with so much of what we call normal fundamentally altered. There are implications for, of course, for our school, for higher education in general, for government, for society at large, for our world, and of course, for all businesses of all shapes, all sizes. We plan to cover a number of these changes on the business front in our discussion today. But before introducing our panelists, I do want to thank all of those alumni and friends who've been regular attendees over the 28 years that we've been running First Tuesday, and also welcome those of you who are joining us for the first time ever. We've never had, as I said, an audience of 1,000. So this is something very, very special for us. I also do want to acknowledge Wells Fargo, who's a longstanding sponsor of the First Tuesday series. With that, I'm honored to introduce our panel of three business leaders who also happens to be members of the Carlson School Board of Overseers and alumni of the University of Minnesota. In alphabetical order, we will start with Whit Alexander, who is the Chief Transformation, Innovation, and Membership Officer of Best Buy. In this role, he's responsible for maintaining the strategic plan and building new offerings and capabilities to deliver the company's goals, including growing Best Buy's enterprise data and analytics capability. Whit previously served as Best Buy's Chief Marketing Officer, and before that, he was with Target Corp and a partner at McKinsey & Company. Whit has a bachelor's degree in business from the Carlson School of Management and an MBA from Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. He also serves on the board of directors for the YMCA of the Greater Twin Cities. Whit, please say hello to everyone.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. With that, let's move to our second panelist, who's Marcelo Montero, who has held leadership positions at Cargill for almost 30 years and is currently heading up strategy and growth for Protein and Salt, one of Cargill's four core business platforms. He has led several Cargill businesses in his career, including Salt in North America, Health and Nutrition and Specialty Sweeteners globally, as well as flour milling in South America. Prior to Cargill, he worked as an economist for the United Nations and World Bank in Buenos Aires and for commercial banks in Cordoba, Argentina. He's a native of Argentina, and Marcelo holds a bachelor's degree in economics from the University of Cordoba in Argentina, as well as a master's degree in agricultural and applied economics and an MBA from the University of Minnesota. Marcelo, hello to everyone.
Hello, Sri, and hello, everyone. Glad to be here today.
Great to have you, too. And last but not least, I'd like to introduce Christy Sovereign, who is the Office Managing Director for Accenture's Minneapolis-St. Paul location. In that role, she's responsible for bringing innovation to clients across 12 industries. and as well as Accenture's portfolio of businesses, attracting top talent and strengthening Accenture's impact on the local community. Since joining Accenture 30 years ago, Christy has served in a number of roles, including as the client service group lead for Accenture's North America products business in the Midwest, played lead roles for some of Accenture's largest client relationships, owned go-to-market and territory leadership roles within Accenture's retail client service group, and led the focus on diversity and inclusion for Accenture's products business in North America. Christy holds a bachelor's in business administration degree from the Carlson School of Management and currently serves on the Greater MSP Board of Directors, the Regional Air Services Partnership Executive Committee, and the ITASCA Group, in addition to being an active volunteer and coach with Special Olympics Minnesota. Christy, please say hello to everyone.
Hello, everyone. Sri, thank you for having me this afternoon. I'm delighted to be part of the panel.
It's great to have all three of you here. So with that, I'm going to start the questioning. So let's get to it. The first question for each of you, and maybe start with Whit Alexander on this one, put you on the spot. What is the most surprising or biggest challenge you faced during this pandemic?
It's a good question. I think there's probably two answers for me and for I won't speak for everyone at Best Buy, but I think in general, I think one of the surprises for me, and we saw it as we've said in our internal statements, in terms of the consistency of revenue retention, despite being at a very different operating model for much of this time, is just how important technology has become to all of our lives. I mean, the fact that we're doing this right now in this way speaks to it at some level. But I don't mean it as much just in the product sense as a retailer, but also if you've all seen it in all of our lives as well, that just from all the human needs that you think about, from everything from certainly working, earning a living, teaching and learning, but also entertainment. I mean, I spend a significant amount of my evenings on streaming services. So really it's been, I think intuitively that made sense even before, but when these changes have really shined a bright light on, wow, how important is technology. On the flip side, and the concern or the thing, the biggest challenge for me is how the sort of human aspect of this is not fully solved just by the flip over to technology. It's a little bit different for everyone. Frankly, my biggest challenge personally now is how do I do a good job leading teams and people? When a lot of my regular rhythms and the way I feel like I was doing a good job staying connected are much harder. You don't walk the floor anymore, as they say. And so understanding that everyone's in those very different positions, for some people, this is heaven. And there's another set of people, which is this, the absolute opposite of heaven. And how do you understand that? How do you continue with outreach? How do you continue doing the right things as a leader has been my biggest challenge, and something I'm still learning through, as we're even this many weeks in.
Thanks, Whit. Anyone else like to jump in? Christy or Marcelo?
Sure. So at Accenture, we're a people and a client business. So perhaps just a couple of observations related to each. I would say for our own business, it was fascinating to watch and kind of filled me with pride just how quickly our organization was able to mobilize as the pandemic took hold. You know, keeping the safety and well-being of 500,000 people across the globe a top priority. And in the US, you know, we had 55,000 people that were able to get home and get up and running in their homes in less than a week's time. So I've been really proud of that and how we've been able to manage, you know, keeping client commitments front and center with folks productive using technology and collaboration tools. We're certainly proving that working virtual works. Perhaps more interesting, I would say, related to our clients, it's been very interesting. Conversations have been dominated by what I'll call the I wish list. It's the I wish I was more digital. I wish I was more data-driven. I wish I was more in the cloud. I wish I was more automated. I wish I had a more variable cost structure. So interestingly, we're not seeing companies focus on new stuff versus turn their attention to accelerating things that were on their list. And I think the other thing that has been really interesting, perhaps really heartwarming to see is the emergence of a crisis purpose. Companies using their assets and capabilities for good. You know, Microsoft making Teams available for free is a fantastic example that immediately comes to mind. You know, companies banding together in support, companies donating supplies to the front line, AB InBev innovating to create hand sanitizer from alcohol waste in their manufacturing. And we've been donating some of our skills and assets for good as well. Our supply chain exchange, which we use in our procurement operations business, has been leveraged to procure PPE and other critical supplies. And in just 2 weeks' time, we built a talent exchange platform modeled off of our internal platform that matches people to client need. Our People Plus Work Connect platform that we're calling it is bringing together companies who are laying off workers with companies in urgent need of workers to help people get back to work faster. So I think it's been really interesting and wonderful to see companies stepping up across the globe for the greater good right now.
Yes.
Yeah, that is amazing. And we see that again with all of our alumni companies as well. Marcelo?
Yeah, I would add, Sri, to what Whit and Christine said. I think, as you know, Cargill is a global food and agriculture company. We operate in 70 countries, and our biggest challenge has been to really work across supply chains to provide an essential service. We provide food for animals and people, and working through the pandemic and with our supply chains, with our transportation partners, with 160,000 colleagues around the world in the front lines who are doing a tremendous job keeping our facilities running, keeping our customers, many of whom are going through changes, significant changes, as we all know, from the social distancing and the change in the food service space. So working across the chain to hand in hand with farmers, ranchers, retailers, food service, restaurants, has been a challenge, but also a great opportunity to grow. We've learned so much in the last 3 months that we are, I'm sure many, many good ideas will come out of this.
It's amazing. I mean, all of you are talking about changes in how your industries and the businesses that you interact with are changing with this time. I mean, whether it's technology, whether it's how you manage people, so many changes. As you look to the future, as we look sort of beyond this pandemic timeframe, do you think some of these changes, what of these changes do you think will remain sort of in place? Do you see some of these changes becoming more sort of permanent ways of doing business? And I don't know, Marcelo, you brought up the changes, so maybe I'll start with you.
Well, certainly. Of course, there's a lot of things that are changing. When you think about the big things in the world, about, for example, provenance, people wanting to know where the food comes from, the whole sustainability that I know is very close to your heart, Sri. The changes in consumer habits and behaviors still to be seen, what would be permanent, what would be temporary. But one I'd like to point out, which I think both Christine and Whit alluded to a little bit, is the virtuality of work. We're learning that, contrary to the last 120 years, we don't need to be face-to-face to get great things done. And this virtuality of work that comes across from leveraging the use of technology, mastering some tools, which we had to do quite a bit over the last few months, at Cargill, we implemented it from simple things, teaching people or helping each other on making technology more effective, more efficient, helping people in places where bandwidth was an issue. I mean, from simple things like that to really becoming comfortable with having a conversation across the globe with 50 people, each of them in their house, right? And how you collaborate, how you make sure that the great ideas come out. And I think this virtuality of work, less travel, more creativity may actually come out as well. So it's not all bad, would say.
Right. No, no, it's not all bad. Wait, or Christy, you want to step in?
I can go, and then Christy can nudge us back, as it were. In some spaces, certainly, as we've been listening to and reaching out to customers to understand, in a number of ways, it's really an acceleration of what was already happening, but mandated, right? And so I already talked about some of the usage patterns we're seeing. Or if you think about our online business, which is up, you know, hundreds of percent, these are things that were already happening, really. But I think it was forced in many ways, sometimes legally, sometimes for the health and safety of our customers and employees. And interestingly, customers are saying they like it. Many aspects of this new model. So, will it be the case that people will, when we are allowed to go back into an old way of doing so, will customers do it? I think that's I don't know that what the crystal ball says there, but there is enough comfort in what we're seeing in the different ways of interacting, certainly with our business, that, you know, I think in some ways it was a great chance for us to innovate quickly. We went from more than a handful of stores being served curbside to in 48 hours, all of them. And, you know, customers love that. And so part of me wonders, is this not so much about the things, maybe Christy, your point, the I wishes, all of a sudden they're just not wishes. You just got to do them. And so I kind of wonder, I think we may have arrived at where customers wanted to go anyway, just maybe a little faster and for the wrong reason.
Christy?
Yeah, I agree with many of those points. I think we're continuing to evolve to a new normal. And I think a lot of the themes and trends that are emerging, both from a consumer and consumer experience perspective and employee experience perspective, are here to stay or will certainly define the next decade for us. I think from a customer perspective, we're seeing a change in attitude and behavior that's affecting all of the what, why, and how we buy. I think that this focus on health and wellness is here to stay. I think this heavy use of e-commerce and digital channels is here to stay. I think it's been said that COVID has done more in the last couple of months to accelerate digital usage and drive digital literacy than we've seen in the past 25 years since the introduction of the internet. I think this acceleration of conscious consumption, Marcelo talked a little bit about it in terms of the supply chain and appreciating where raw product is coming from. You know, this isn't a new trend, but I think we're going to see an acceleration of people buying only what they need and being very focused on where did it come from and sustainable choices. And I think that this new trend of home as a hub, and with it, this trust, safety, purpose motivation that is emerging, it's driving buy local, it's driving buy from those you trust, it's driving, you know, bias toward purpose-led brands. And of course, because all of us as employees are also humans and consumers, I think that changes in workers and expectations in the workplace, we're going to see permanent change as well. We are absolutely, I think, on the cusp of a working from home revolution. We did some research that looked at people working from home, and over half of those that were brand new to working from home, had never done it before, say that they're going to continue working from home at some level post-COVID. And we're certainly seeing how these technologies can let us be productive. And I think that this home as a hub trend is going to show up in employers and employees with trust, safety, purpose, more than now, employees needing to trust their employers. And as they're letting work into their home, making sure that their personal circumstances aren't going to compromise them. We're going to continue to see interest in collaboration. We're going to see interest in more personal connections. And I think we're going to expect employers to behave responsibly and honor multiple stakeholders, not just shareholders, as we continue to move forward.
Yes, across all of you, I see this theme of the virtuality of work emerging and how it's been incredible to see so many people becoming digitally competent at this time, just, you know, thanks to COVID. And it's, you know, if you ever have to thank it for anything, I mean, that's a different question. But, you know, the interesting thing, you know, I mean, this has happened, of course, at the universities. I mean, we have faculty who wouldn't dream of teaching online, having been forced to teach online very quickly. And some of them are actually really liking it. So, I mean, it's amazing how these changes have happened when we least expected them. But, you know, again, with the virtuality of work, I mean, one thing that has bothered me a bit is how do you keep, you know, the team spirit? How do you create a spirit of working in teams across a team that's, you know, spread across the world? And how do you kind of keep them together? And I know Accenture's got a lot of experience doing this because you were already at some level working remotely in teams, you know, even before this happened. So I don't know if you have something to add to our understanding of how you make that happen.
Sure, sure. Well, Sri, let me first start by saying, as a mother of a U of M freshman that's now doing online learning at home, the university is doing a phenomenal job in what's been your pivot to making that happen for students. And selfishly, I'm loving these college students at home. I'm sure he feels differently. I would say at Accenture, we're a really agile mobile workforce. So moving to remote working for us was probably a lot more business as usual, as you say, for us than it was for many. We are and were and still are, I should say, the largest corporate user of Microsoft Teams globally. And our usage more than doubled since the onset of the pandemic. And video usage for us spiked even more dramatically, up 5x what it was pre-COVID. So again, you know, we're seeing Microsoft tech or collaboration technologies, be it Teams, be it Mural, be it Menti, to name a few, really stand the test and prove the ability for us to be productive. So what have we learned? I think there's three things that I would highlight from our experience. First, this very interesting notion of people aren't working from home, they're rather at home working. And everyone is working with a really unique circumstance they're trying to manage. And it's important that employers, leaders and employers are recognizing that personal circumstance. You know, some are riding it out alone. Others are riding it out with very, very complicated households, dual workers and children who need care. And workers need to know that bringing their whole self to work, interruptions included, isn't only okay, it's expected. And employers need to recognize that employees are people first and that their needs need to be met before they can productively contribute. The other thing I mentioned, the second thing I mentioned is this trend health, it's pervading consumerism. I think it's here to stay in the workplace as well. We've recognized that giving priority to physical and mental health is key and is going to continue to dominate a new normal. And I think that starts with, as leaders, us recognizing that it's really outcomes that matter, right? And you need to give workers freedom to work where and when they can be most productive. I've got a team member, one of these complex households, that's working 5 a.m. to 1 p.m. while her husband is working 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. so that they can caregive for small children. And I've been on calls where the home office has been a garage, a bedroom, outside, you know, even on a boat. So I think embracing this notion of office as whatever place that you can be productive is important. And I think employees are appreciating the trust and freedom that they're being shown so that they can work when and where they can be their best. And that includes the physical and mental well-being. You know, for physical well-being, we're encouraging walking calls when people can take them. And for mental well-being, I think trying to circumvent what a lot of the experts are saying might be the next pandemic called mental health or an anxiety pandemic. You know, we've added calls, typically optional at the end of the day, that are geared toward fostering sense of community and letting people just connect without an explicit agenda. And then I'd probably just put an exclamation point again behind this trust, safety, purpose motivator that I spoke of, you know, that's come to the fore. Again, employees really need to feel safe and respected and cared about and trusted as a worker in a model that's focused on outcomes. And employees regarding purpose are really looking to be connected with something meaningful. They want to see their companies behave responsibly for the greater good, and they want to have opportunities, be it fundraising or virtual volunteering that their companies would support to make a difference. So we're really trying to pay attention to all of those things.
You know, that was amazing too. You know, it's just, you're absolutely right. I mean, people are working from all kinds of circumstances, and we have to be very mindful of, you know, how they're, you know, their personal circumstances as they try to, you know, work at home or, you know, and work remotely. What about Marcelo? I mean, you have a traditional industrial company, you have food production facilities, you have, you know, you're working with farmers. I mean, it's a very different situation than maybe a consulting firm where perhaps remote work is more easy to do. How do you manage to keep the teams going in this new environment?
Yes, but, you know, I wanted to stress the point that Christine raised about this emotional well-being.
Right.
We will only run our plants if our people are safe. Safety is of paramount importance. And we need to provide an essential service. We have to do both. We work hard and even came up with a psychological toolkit to help people cope with the crisis. Both at home and when they're at work, talking about it, giving people information about it, helping them talk to their children about it, understanding what is possible, what are alternatives we have. We've introduced, from things to make people feel safe, like temperature checks, physical barriers between, for example, in a meat processing plant, people are very close to each other. And sometimes the 6 feet social distancing guideline doesn't apply. So we build physical barriers to give people confidence. We help people get tested when they have symptoms. We help the communities around them. So for example, we put our office center cafeteria here in Minnetonka is operating to help people that are in vulnerable spaces right now. So it's about, this idea of physical safety is important, but it's not enough. Emotional safety is, in times like this, almost as important as well.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the mental health issues that our students are facing and our staff and faculty, all of them, this is not something we're used to. We're social animals as human beings, and it's tough to ride this out, and we have to be able to provide what support we can in this situation. Absolutely right. Whit, anything to add to how you handle the remote or teamwork-based workforce?
No, I think that these are such great comments. I mean, our people are our insurmountable advantage, right, in our business. And we've got some unique things too. We have people that go into homes to do services and whether it's repair, support, or even, evaluating the next great technology solution. So obviously, I mean, I think it's well said by everyone here that safety first, certainly. I think the other thing for me is, and the thing I've been so proud of Best Buy for doing, is it also needs to be active. It's policies that aren't just if you ask for time away or space or I don't feel comfortable. It's proactively stating that. Like, if you do not feel comfortable coming to work, as an example, please do not. It's about active communication. I mean, from my perspective, not only because some of the normal rhythms are disrupted, but also, the environment that we're in, constantly hearing from leaders individually, but also more broadly speaking. I mean, we've significantly ramped up just constant communications, connections with Corey and the rest of our leadership team. And so it's really a proactive approach, including lastly, for us, is active listening. Too often in companies, you get the once a year how to go survey. And it's sort of like the evaluation tool of the leadership, right? Instead, it needs to become a much more proactive, ongoing listening, like what's working, what's not. Certainly, are we getting this right? Are we not? What are the things that are issues or not? So you know, again, that includes safety, but Marcel, I think you put it perfectly. Safety is a thing, but certainly not enough. And even once we move past this moment of this early point, this working from home continues afterwards. So it's going to have to evolve ongoing. And the only way you can do that is listen, just like we talk about listening to customers all the time, we have to apply that same kind of rigor to our people.
That's amazing. Do you think there's something about Best Buy's culture that helped you make this change? I mean, what role does the corporate culture play in sort of making sure that people could pivot on a dime in this
right situation? It's a great question. I mean, you know, what is the line that Peter Drucker said, that culture eats strategy for breakfast? And every culture, I mean, you mentioned early on the different places I've been, and they're very different. But one thing I would say about, and so it's important to lean into whatever that culture is, right? And Best Buy's culture is one of family, very much. In fact, people were saying that when my 5-year anniversary was last week, and I was like, yeah, family. But no, it's true. It really is the way that the place operates. And so for us, that's what it is meant, is really sort of rallying together and the culture of getting through together. It's a place that's been through some ups and downs over the last decade and so forth. And so going back to it's a different playbook out of it, but it's very much a same set of stories and history that make up a culture that we can go back to and say, just like we survived this, this will happen. We picked ourselves up together before, we'll do it now. And so for us, it's been finding those unique cultural things that are very Best Buy and really leaning into them. And that family who's been through it all together before has been the key for us.
Right. That's anything that Marcelo or Christy, anything you'd like to add to that?
Well, I think culture is absolutely critical, right? At Cargill, two of our core values are put people first and do the right thing. And those have come very, very handy to think about how to work through the different challenges we are facing.
Right. No, that makes total sense. Anything, Christy?
I would compliment you. I mean, our perspective is culture change more than anything is what drives agility into a heart of an organization. And I think that example you gave about accelerating the curbside pickup and the things that you've done demonstrates the importance of kind of this culture of experimentation, where you do and you learn and you adjust and you flex and you tweak and you keep going. And I think that will be something that will be more important, you know, important more than ever for all of us in our companies going forward.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. One of my favorite things is these videos go viral now. And there's this great one of, look at what they did in this part of upstate New York to make contactless smoother. And it's like, you know, if you wait to get this perfect, we'll never change.
Right. Good is the enemy of great, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I think this culture of experimentation and innovation, I mean, we've seen that very much in a university setting. I mean, and hopefully that's one of the positive things that'll come out of this, that people will continue to feel that they can, you know, make, take action and, you know, not get it perfect the first time, but, you know, let it sort of play out, and then we can decide whether it's working and how do we tweak it and how do we change and things like that. So I think that's very much true of higher education as well. I'd love to know a little bit more about, you know, how do you do this globally? And I know, Marcelo, you have probably the largest global organization of this group. Maybe Accenture has more people. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. But you certainly have the most diverse global industrial structure out there. I mean, so many different lines of business, so many countries. How do you kind of, you know, how did you sort of make sure that this, what have you learned from, you know, all the different businesses out there and, you know, through this pandemic?
Well, I would say that fortunately, and perhaps unfortunately, we've been living through this earlier than when it happened in North America. Cargill has a significant business in China. Sure. And we've been witnessing and working through the virus in actual processing facilities since the month of January, very much January, February. So lots of learnings that we've captured out of our operation in China, that now we are able to apply in Colombia, in Central America, in other parts of Asia, and of course in Europe and North America as well. So share information about what are best practices, not only among our plants and our facilities, but also with industry to make best practices. We contributed to build a website so all industry players in meat processing can deal with this crisis, the safety aspects a little better. So we are back up and running in China, and life, as many of you know, and many people from the school, very close to ties to China, know this very well. And again, the learnings have been excellent for us of things that that we can do and things that we probably should not do. So it's been a very good experience and a benefit of being a global company.
That's great. That's interesting. That's really interesting. Anything you'd like to add, Christine, to that?
I would say, Sri, it's been interesting for us. I think that, you know, collectively we're seeing universal imperative for governments and organizations to take action together. And we're seeing the very positive impact that this successful collaboration between governments and businesses is having, not just in the health sector, but in all industries. And I think that's going to continue. And the same is applied for businesses joining force. You know, I think examples like Google and Apple, who joined forces to track COVID cases, has been hugely impressive. So, you know, in our business, we're thinking a lot about how do we activate on that more intentionally. How do we partner differently? How do we help broker partnerships differently? Recognizing the importance, right, that we're seeing play out. And I think just another thing that's been interesting, you know, we're seeing, you know, experts back be in fashion. You know, this whole reinvention of authority that's come with a dependence on governments and experts in a way that we haven't had to for a very long time. You know, I think that that's going to herald a global reset about how authority should behave. And, you know, whether it's in our sustainability business or in other places, I think it'll be really interesting to see what's going to happen if people do start to pay more attention to what experts are saying in all spaces. You know, certainly the effect on the sustainability debate is going to be profound, and that's a couple of things that, you know, we're thinking about and rolling around with internally right now.
Right. I mean, absolutely. I mean, at the university, we are so pleased and proud to have so many of the sort of people, the scientists who've actually been doing the work on public health, on pandemics, on viruses, in so many areas. Just sort of taking the lead and trust in expertise and experts, I think is something that we are really sort of happy about as well. Whit, I know you don't sell very much internationally, but you do have a big supply chain operation.
Yes, we do sell in Canada and Mexico, and to your point, we manufacture and we have a supply chain operation certainly in Asia. And so, you know, just as much as it's each location matters. I mean, it's different in New York than our retail or supply chain operations in you know, the center of the country. So each one of those is important. But and I don't know that I'll add much on what Marcel or Christy said, other than to say, I actually think beyond global question, there's this external world, which I think is really great. First of all, I think it's great for this current moment. We're seeing collaboration where we didn't. You're reaching out to other companies that are facing different challenges. How did you think about taking care of your people, you know, hotel chain, as we're thinking about for our stores? It means reaching out to governments in more sort of active ways than is typical, I think. And so I think that might be one of the great legacies and potentially a real boost to things like innovation. Certainly for us, we want to be a leader of coming out of this and not only driving safety for our customers and our employees, but also great new experiences that it's going to feel very different on the other side. And the only way you do that is to look externally, not for emulation necessarily, but to spark new ideas and where you go. And so there's I spend as much time as I can from this room with people that don't work at Best Buy. And by the way, many of them are global. People in China that have lived through it, maybe an extra beat of this, or partner a similar company in Europe that is thinking ahead too and where they might go next. And those are great, and I can bring it back, and it's a jumping off point for where we might go. So I think it's beyond global. It needs to be just an external mindset that we too often don't do. We spend our time with ourselves, and there needs to also be some external, whether through partners like Accenture or companies themselves reaching out. People want to hear from each other right now.
Right, absolutely.
That's right.
Well, I think this is, we've had this wonderful, wonderful discussion. I'm sure, right now I can see close to 500 participants still there. And so we would love to hear from you. Please raise your hand using your hand raise feature, and you will be called and muted in turn.
Yes, please feel free to raise your hand. We will unmute you, call your name. If you are calling in with a phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand or *6 to mute.
Geek Squad agents, as an example, to be able to answer phones to deal with issues that we're normally going to be working in an in-store environment. And so I think your instinct is absolutely right that what this probably means is certainly in the near term, but going forward is thinking about people in terms of the skills that they can provide, much less about the title that they have, which is really exciting for people. I mean, I've been really proud of the teams that partners are retraining to do something a little bit differently. Going forward, I think we're still thinking about, the right way to reopen, as it were. What's really cool is we launched this week by appointment only model in some of our stores, and we'll continue to roll that out. So, I'm gonna punt a little bit as we learn from that model in exactly the right way. But very clearly, people want that model. We'll put safety first, and I think you're right that it's going to have to change, but there's already both an employee and a customer desire to do things a little differently, and they're missing each other in that connection. So we're going to continue to make new ways to connect.
Thank you.
Great. Now we've got Chris Taylor.
Yes, I'm here. Well, thank you so much, everybody. This has been a great discussion. I work in healthcare innovation, and one of the things that is certainly getting a lot of attention, and I think was mentioned, was the usage around telehealth and virtual healthcare services. I'd just be curious to hear from the panelists, you begin to look at your health benefits that you provide for your employees. Any early insights you have relative to your population usage patterns around telehealth? As well as how you see that becoming an even more integral part of the benefits that you might be providing employees that you look a little bit longer term.
Who wants to?
I can try here, and I might be off a little bit because I'm not sure I have all the facts I would need to directly address what you're saying. But as you know, or may know, Best Buy has been investing very heavily to enter the health space. This was one of those trends that I mentioned earlier that was already ramping up, the availability of sensors and so forth to do a lot of the work that you would need to do in person in an office or the rest of it. And so from an employer standpoint, obviously we will do as much as we humanly can to keep people safe and healthy. It's Christy, I think that's exactly right. That's going to be an ongoing thing. But also, maybe I'll introduce a slightly different wrinkle to this, which is we've seen facts in a number of as we're talking to consumers and looking at research and so forth, that this is one of those places that consumers are starting to say is stickier than maybe some of the other changes. you know, I personally am not a huge fan of the restaurant cold food delivery. I might want to go back to a real restaurant someday, but I'm not feeling a strong pull to go back in a waiting room and all the rest of it for things that aren't necessary. So I think, Chris, not only will companies have to provide that, but I think consumers generally, aka patients, aka employees, are, that's one of the places we're seeing, like, yes, absolutely. And someone that could help me do that in my home, get everything working and make sure that I could be treated, whether it be mental health or physical ailments, is definitely something we're seeing. This is a change that's going to stay.
Christina,
I would say, Chris, we had that telehealth as part of our benefits, recognizing with people all over the globe, they needed to have, you know, remote ability to get, you know, physical or mental health consult as needed. And we've seen the use of it just absolutely spike. So I think it's probably in keeping with my earlier comments about, you know, anything that can be virtualized is being virtualized and will continue to be used in a virtualized manner. I couldn't agree more with that. I think this is one that is here to stay, and the usage of that, you know, as a channel for delivery of medicine is just going to continue to grow.
Marcelo, you want to add anything? Should we?
No, I think it was well covered. I only see the usage going up. People want information, people want to know, and also people will be much more mindful of the risks. So I agree with Whit and Christine.
Great.
All right, we've got our next question with Anthony Jason. Anthony?
Hi, my name is actually Gracie McKinstry-Smith. I'm calling in with him. I went to the Carlson School of Management myself and currently work on the Guest Insights team at Target. And so my question for you all is, knowing that the COVID-19 situation is changing rapidly, what are you all doing to quickly understand the week-to-week changes of consumer mindset during COVID-19? And how are you able to work with other leaders at your company to really accelerate the speed of implementation and prototyping to really move quickly with all of this?
Well, I can start with some thoughts. Thank you, Gracie, for the question. We are in a different spaces at Cargill and different regions as well. We have our teams are looking at ways or beginning to think about the ways that the COVID-19 pandemic can impact their business. We're looking at the areas of ways of working impact. And we talked a little bit about that, what will be permanent, what will stay, and what will be temporary. We're looking at changes on strategy and our growth going forward as well. Is you know, how is the world changing and what trends are going to be here and such. And then a big part is the one you mentioned, which is the consumer, the demand side, what our customers are expecting, changes in channels. You know, we all know the reduction in food service and the growth in retail, how permanent will be that? Will people's behaviors change? So our insights teams in the different businesses share that information, get together, and we come up with either regional views or sometimes global views. We also, of course, are talking to customers, and you touch on the point of innovation and agility. Those are two big things for us that we believe are going to be particularly useful coming out of the crisis or during the crisis, as we need to be faster at coming up with prototypes, experimenting, see what works, and move on to the next iteration of the product. So those two are working hand in hand with, again, farmers, ranchers, and our food customers is going to become important.
Yeah, well, first of all, hello to the Target Guest Insights team. That was my old group, so say hi to everyone. I would say there are two parts to that. One is the source of information, then how are you using it, right? And I think, first of all, you know, all the old favorites for us in terms of information, certainly, and with Guest Insights, leverages with great success, I know, is research. Certainly that's a thing. All the brand trackers and all those things have a different flavor and feel now. NPS surveys that we have on every interaction, or close to it. That's probably not true. That's overstating a little bit, but the so we're certainly leveraging those, but I think also the external sources. And so when we're, it's not necessarily something that we're going to all be crazed. So we're looking to external partners, whether it's people that can help us try and find proxies to customer sentiment, like things like, are people moving around or not? Understanding the changes in sources of data that help us understand, are things getting better or faster or better or worse and faster or slower and all the rest of it from an actual disease standpoint. So we're looking external, as I said before, as well as internal. And frankly, though, to the second point, it's less about getting the data for us because there's lots. Everyone's got a I've talked to every consultant about the dashboard business happening right now. Rather, I think your other question is the important one. It's sitting and understanding with operational leaders, with people that are, you know, leading teams of people and driving these innovations that I mentioned. What kind of information do you need when? And how are we making those changes so that it's timely and it's, you know, there's lots of information to find, but what are the things that we need to know when so that we can quickly react and innovate? I think that's really the magic. It's probably the magic always, but certainly in an environment where we're having to pivot with such agility, it's just as much about finding the right entry points and how decisions are made as much as the facts.
Thanks, Wade. I think we have time for one more question.
Yeah.
And those of you who still have your hands up and you haven't been able to questions in, I encourage you to just put it down. I mean, can they do the chat function, or I'm not sure if they can or not in this. So Amy, if someone can help me with that.
Yes, you can feel free to chat and we can get back to them.
Okay, great. So if you haven't got your question in, please just put it in the chat and we'll try and get it to our panelists and get answers for you from them. But we do have time for one more question, I think.
And our final question will come from Laura Murphy.
Hi there. Yeah, I've got a question specific for Marcelo. I grew up in outstate Minnesota and 30 miles in each direction, approximately, there was a meatpacking plant. They've obviously had a lot of issues lately with some shutdowns. And I know there's folks that have been at Costco stocking up on meat because they think the entire supply chain is going to crash. From a Cargill point of view, I mean, what's your take on that? How much is that affecting your business? What is Cargill doing to help farmers out there? Because I know we're a big pork producing county and basically there is nowhere to even bring the hogs to get processed. Can you just give a little insight on that?
Sure, yes. And it's certain and known by everybody that the food system is under strain right now in the US. We have some spot shortages due to either some plants being partially or temporarily shut down. Transportation issues, and in some cases, there was a panic buying, right? So people stock up of product, probably anticipating this. So we, as I said, we will not run our plants if it's not safe for our people. At the same time, we understand the role in providing an essential service and an essential part of the food system. So we're working to do both. And in that venue, we work very close with our ranchers, with our customers, to make sure we can face the challenges together and find solutions. So we are in communication with them. We provided grants to many producers to help through the crisis. And then information. In one of our plants recently, for example, we had a town hall where not only all the employees, but the community was invited. The political leaders were invited. The union leaders, of course, are there. Health professionals are there. And there was a decision that was made by everybody. So communication, being empathetic and understanding, being transparent about the challenges are the things we're doing right now. Thank you for the question.
Well, thank you all. This has been an amazing panel and the first time we've tried this out. So we will be sending out a brief survey to find out what went well for you, what we could do better next time. But we are going to have another virtual First Tuesday on June 2nd, noon again. We don't know who the panelists are going to be. We haven't quite finalized that yet, but I hope that all of you who joined me here today will join me again. I can't thank the three panelists enough, Marcelo Montero, Christy Sovereign, Whit Alexander. Thank you for being here and for sharing your wisdom on these times with us. I mean, I think one thing that's become very clear to me after listening to all of you is that while sort of technology was this, the thing that has driven a lot of the change, it's all about people. It's about how do you engage them? How do you make sure they're healthy and safe and so on? And so technology, it's really technology in the service of people. And I think that's the big message that I'm at least going away with from here, that we can never forget the human piece. Anyhow, hope to see all of you June 2nd. It was great to have you here. Thank you for, being with us. And if anyone, as I said, still wants to throw in some questions in the chat box, please do so. Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Bye-bye.
That's a wrap on our latest episode. Thanks to Dean Zahir, Whit Alexander, Marcelo Montero, and Christy Sovereign. You can find more information about this podcast, including previous episodes, on our website, z.umn.edu/boardroom. I'm Jamie Plusser from the Carlson School of Management. Thanks for listening.